When I think broadly across the industry and I look back over my career early on, there weren't a lot of female leaders at the table. And so I would say that in the last 15 to 20 years, we've started to see more and more women join the workforce, more and more women join the ranks within a lot of these financial institutions. When we look at Canada specifically, only 19% of C-level positions are female, and only 1.4% of them are women of color or LGBTQ status. And so I think we still have a very long way to go in Canada, across the globe, and specifically in financial services.
Meet Jacqueline O'Flanagan, the Canadian financial services industry lead at Microsoft.
Jacqueline's extensive background has uniquely shaped her current leadership role, bringing a deeper understanding of both technology and finance to the forefront of Microsoft's initiatives in Canada.
Jacqueline is a fervent advocate for diversity and inclusion. She spearheads the Women at Microsoft initiative, championing the cause for greater female representation and diversity within the financial services and technology landscapes.
In today's discussion, we'll delve into Jacqueline's perspective on AI's transformative role in the industry, her leadership in fostering a diverse and inclusive environment, and the impact of digital innovation on financial services. Plus, we'll uncover her insights into sustainability and the future of finance.
Here's our conversation with Jacqueline O'Flanagan.
Jacqueline, you've had an amazing background. How has this background shaped your approach to your current role as the head of financial services for Canada at Microsoft?
If I look back over my career, I think I've always been at the precipice of change between technology, investments, and financial services. And it's really given me a broader perspective across the entire investment landscape, as well as the technology landscape. And so when I think about the investment landscape, having worked with banks, asset managers, pensions, foundations, investments, endowments, so on and so forth, and then really looking at both the investment process, the investor process, the end user experience, advisor process, it's really kind of given me a 360 degree view of the entire industry across the globe. And so it's been an outstanding opportunity.
Jacqueline, since you're basically working at the intersection of technology and finance, I think it's especially cool that you're leading women at Microsoft, since based on my experience, having a similar background, that's always where women are the minority in both fields. I'm not even talking of the intersection of these two. So can you maybe elaborate a little bit what is women at Microsoft and also what's your involvement?
So I lead and co-chair our Women at Microsoft program for Canada and also work with our worldwide team as well. Prior to this, I led diversity, equity, and inclusion for CGI. And I also led women in technology at the London Stock Exchange. And so it's really been a culmination of my career that's led me to this moment. In the existing role that I have, it's really to support and empower any of the female individuals and or allies that we have across Microsoft today to educate, create awareness, and create broader opportunity for us to support that entire industry and initiative, but it really spans outside of our core employees as well into collaboration with other employee resource groups. So we do a lot of joint events with what we call BAM or OLA. So that would be Blacks at Microsoft or Spanish at Microsoft. We're actually doing an upcoming program specifically focused on Indigenous women in Canada and also tying that into financial services in Canada for the Red Dress Movement for all of the Indigenous women that went missing to create awareness for different elements of impacts in Canadian history. The other thing that we do and what this allows me to do is to work more closely with some of our clients as well as industry initiatives. And so when I think about what we do with some of the other banks or some of the other pension plans, creating skilling programs across Canada, looking at the broader impact that female diversity has within this ecosystem truly helps drive next level impact, not only just for women at Microsoft, but for women in financial services as well.
Why do you think we still do see so little representation of women in fintech, especially in the senior roles, but also in the broader financial sector? And what do you think can be done to change this?
Great question. And especially being International Women's History Month, it's definitely been top of mind for many. And so when I think broadly across the industry and I look back over my career early on, there weren't a lot of female leaders at the table. And so I would say that in the last 15 to 20 years and maybe a little more than that, we've started to see more and more women join the workforce, more and more women join the ranks within a lot of these financial institutions. And I think that boards and industry aside, they view broader diversity creating stronger impact within organizations. And so what we have started to see is women rise in roles and really kind of bring that third-party perspective to the leadership table. When we look at Canada specifically, only 19% of C-level positions are female, and only 1.4% of them are women of color or LGBTQ status. And so I think we still have a very long way to go in Canada, across the globe, and specifically in financial services.
What is the business impact that having more women in senior leadership roles could have for financial organizations?
When I think about it through that lens, definitely broader diversification of leadership, definitely different ways of thinking, the ability to multitask and bring different perspectives from every day, and really kind of create that broader way of thinking across not just a female diversity, but across an entire culturally diverse leadership ecosystem. I think the more we show up as individuals and bring different perspectives and different inputs and different cultural attributes to that, the better we can shape the world for a future environment that hopefully we will see more and more diversity across all spectrums.
And I think also having a female role model to some extent is helpful when you're at the early stages of a career.
Absolutely. And if I look back at my career, there were very few women in those leadership roles. And so I have over time had to fight to have a broader seat at the table. But I also try and champion those whose voices are not as strong. And I think I realized later in my career, the power that a role like mine had, or even the ability to speak up and be heard. And so I now champion that for the better. And, you know, wherever I have the opportunity to create cross-collaboration programs across the entire ecosystem, so whether that be with clients or with regulators or whatever the case is, but also to kind of reinvest and support other programs like STEM or different programs for girls who game and things like that, that create technology impact and awareness at a young age and a young foundation, I think is critical. We actually have done a significant number of hackathons this year with local schools and local universities to create impact and awareness, and especially around AI. When we start to think about the impact of AI on future generations and biases that go into some of these models today without having full representation, I think it's even more critical now that we focus. For all the work that we've done in the past that's led us to today, it's still created a broader opportunity for us to lean in more, hear more, listen more, and do more.
And it's great to hear that Microsoft is also starting at the very early stages. I know that BCG is having an initiative called Pi Girls, which basically teaches small girls in high school how to program. It's great to see that this is not the only one trying to approach them, the young girls, and making them interested.
The Women at Microsoft and Pi Girl initiatives are really stepping up to tackle a big issue. Not enough women in tech. But here's something interesting. Having diverse teams isn't just about doing the right thing. It turns out it's also great for business. According to an article from BCG called Learning from Women Who've Made It to the Top in Tech, companies with at least 30% female leaders were found to be 15% more profitable than those without. This really highlights how diversity isn't just fair, it's smart. It's about bringing different ideas and perspectives to the table, which in turn boosts innovation and performance. We've put an article in our show notes if you want to dive deeper. All right, now let's get back to hearing more from Jacqueline.
Can you maybe elaborate a little bit on how you see AI shaping the future of industry and how much of an impact it has, or the potential of AI has to make?
That's a million-dollar question. AI has definitely been top of mind, not only for Microsoft, but for many firms. And I would say a lot of the acceleration of education of AI started about a year ago. And that was really with the announcement of some of the partnerships with OpenAI. A lot of the ethical AI news that was in the media last year with the coming together of a lot of the large hyperscalers to create a more ethical AI roadmap for the future. But when I think about the current AI moment, I think we're really just at the infancy. And when we think about the broader and long-term impact that this has, not only on the financial services segment, but on our economy, on the globe, on diversification and diversity across the workforce, this represents a huge inflection point. And there has been no other time in history where we've seen a technology enable as quickly as AI. And so when you think about the Industrial Revolution, two moments would be the introduction of the printing press and the introduction of the steam engine. And when you think about the printing press, this really transformed our ability to think and share information at speed and scale and get knowledge into the hands of others. When you think about other times in our history, there has never been this type of moment. And so when you think about AI today, it's not just about traditional AI and machine learning. Generative AI takes on a whole new use case. You have human in the loop and human interaction, but you also now have the opportunity to serve the needs of many. And so think about it through natural language models and natural language processing, where you have individuals who may not have the ability to read or write, who can actually speak into a technology device and get answers almost instantaneously to a world that they didn't have access to previously. And so I think that when we start to think about the small use cases that a lot of organizations are looking at now, to the broader use cases of creating a sentient industry and a sentient enterprise and the interoperability between them, the potential and the magnitude for change is astronomical. And so currently today within the financial services segment, this represents over $10 trillion in immediate opportunity for growth within the next 3 to 5 years if organizations start to streamline and capitalize on the productivity gains, leveraging AI to reinvest into new things that will generate revenue for them with that additional productivity.
And how does Microsoft plan to contribute to and harness the potential of AI? What areas do you see as the key drivers for this opportunity?
So I think Microsoft is definitely one of the players who's leading AI from an all-up perspective today. But when we think about financial services specifically, the use cases are endless. And so we're seeing the evolution of contact centers being one of the big ones and one of the early stage AI use cases where you can now streamline process, transcribe calls on the fly, look at sentiment of that call, create new training programs and patterns for future involvement and engagement with some of the clients. You look at others where you're looking at advisor use cases or employee use cases where you're creating efficiency and productivity at scale. You've got chatbots that are being implemented. And so these are kind of some of the fundamental base use cases, but now we're starting to see risk modeling being put in place at an enterprise level, managing and measuring portfolio risk, looking at climate change risk using AI and so on and so forth. And so I think we're really just at the infancy of what some of these use cases are. It's when you start to connect some of the individual institutions to the broader industry, to the globe, and create that continuity. That's where we're going to start to see significant change and progress in AI.
How do you think culture needs to shift in the area of AI adoption? And can you maybe provide some examples how organizations are navigating those changes?
Culture is really top of mind. A lot of the time, organizations look at technology and think it's just technology for replicating technology change across the board, but change management is really fundamental to what we're seeing in AI. And so the way people did things previously may not be the way they're doing things on a go-forward basis. And so when you look back at the opportunity to develop a growth mindset and encourage employees to, you know, lean in on new technologies, understand prompt engineering, understand how they can use some of these technologies day in and day out, has definitely been a big part of it. But I would say from a culture change, organizations are really starting to think differently about harvesting and reinvesting talent. As they start to think about AI use cases, will they require the same number of employees to do the same jobs that they had previously? Or will they need to maybe cut some of those current roles as they think about reinvesting with the productivity gains that the current employees have. How can they reinvest those productivity gains into new areas of revenue generation or collaborative ways of thinking? And so a lot of boards and a lot of strategic level steercos are really starting to think about what the future looks like for that. And culture change is a big part of it. When you think about the way that people collaborate, when you think about the future of hybrid work, when you think about different things along those lines, I mean, we're only sitting at the precipice of what change could look like. And when we think about the change evolution pre-COVID, before Teams and before hybrid work, there was a time where we never even thought that we would be able to work from home at the way that we do today. And so I think that AI is really going to change the way we engage collectively, and organizations need to set themselves up for that future success.
And how does the transition impact the way organizations make decisions as they approach and implement AI strategies?
From a cultural perspective, one of the things that we have started to realize is that in the past, a lot of technology conversations or decisions were made through the lens of just technology. Now, what we're seeing with AI, this is really bringing together both technology and business to the forefront. And so no individual can make a single decision. It's really got to be a collaborative decision, thinking about the future impact. And so what we saw in the past were firms were possibly looking at Horizon 1 or Horizon 2. Now AI is impacting Horizon 2, 3, 5, and beyond. And so when they're starting to think about culture decisions and how they're starting to transition, understanding who the stakeholders are, understanding what the end strategy is, understanding the goal of the organization and aligning those culture changes has been one of the substantial parts of that.
How did the lack of female representation in the development of early language models affect AI? And what efforts are being made to address gender biases in AI?
When I think back to about a year ago, International Women's History Month and some of the statistics that were coming from the UN at the time, early on, the representation was about 3% female being input into the large language models. Now, within the last year, we've made significant progress, and we're now actually at about 8%, which is significant growth over what we saw last year. But when you look back at what's happened in the news and in the media over the course of the last 12 months, there's been a lot of negative media around some of the output that has come from ChatGPT and some of the other programs like Bard, where they're being used by the public consumer. And so what has happened is across the industry and across Microsoft, we've put in a specific framework for ethical AI to ensure that as these models are being built and the outputs have a clearly ethical perspective and a non-biased perspective. And so that, I think, will be one of the big driving factors and forces for us on a go-forward basis. But I still think that there is a tremendous amount of work that needs to be done to ensure that these models have a truly diverse perspective as we go forward.
All right, let's take a moment to think about what Jacqueline just shared about women and AI development. It's not just a numbers game. It's about making tech that's fair and balanced for everyone. Now, here's something cool from a recent BCG research. Senior women in technology are really embracing generative AI. A whopping 75% of them are using it at work. That's even more than men, who are at 61. And that's really good news. It shows that women leaders in tech are harnessing this new technology, helping to shape a culture and community of innovation and experimentation. Now, let's jump back to Jacqueline and hear more about how Microsoft is making waves with technology and what this means for the future. Talking about specific models here, I know that one of Microsoft's initiatives in sustainability includes climate stress testing models. Can you elaborate on what these stress testing models are and maybe also give some examples of how they are being implemented?
There are a couple that we have in place today. And so when you think about climate risk through net zero commitments in general, there is a broader opportunity for us to have an impact. And so by strategically allocating capital away from activities that are carbon intensive while increasing capital available to activities will enable the world to transition to net zero. Financial institutions can directly influence the pace at which the global economy can achieve the Paris goals. And so that has really underpinned a lot of the foundation for how we've started to think about stress testing. and work with some of the largest financial institutions, specifically in Canada, to help them on this journey as they move towards some of the broader regulatory challenges that we face in market as well.
Looking ahead, what advice would you give women interested in joining or growing their careers in financial services from someone like you who has found so much success?
I guess if I look back at my career, it hasn't always been linear. You know, a lot of people today come out of university or come out of prior experience and they think that they need to follow a specific path. And I can say I really kind of let, in my early career, I let opportunity guide me. And so I had a lot of very strong mentors and collaborators around me that identified opportunity, that helped coach me through success, that saw skills and a different perspective in me that I may have not recognized myself, and strongly encouraged that. And so as I moved on through my career, I was open to new opportunities. I embraced a growth mindset. I have always been eager to learn and to try new things. And so that would probably be my biggest advice for anyone early in their career. Really try and explore and learn from as many opportunities as you can. As my career started to transition into where I am today, I took a bit of a pause a few years ago, and I realized that a lot of the organizations that I had been working with or working for, I had poured my heart and soul into, as many of us do. But then I kind of decided to take a step back and evaluate what I wanted in the remainder of time that I had in my career. And so when I looked at the remaining 10, 15, 20 years, I decided I wanted to approach it with a purpose of mission and value that was going to drive me to leave a personal legacy, but to really connect to who I wanted to be. And so I've really started to look at organizational mission. Does it align to who I am as an individual? Do I believe in that? Does it allow me to have impact at scale, personally and professionally? Can I live and embody the company culture and values day in and day out? And is it truly an extension of who I am? And that has really helped set the stage for where I am in my career today and where I foresee my career going. And I think as women, we spend so much of our time working, and we spend so much of our time mentoring and leading and managing our teams, and they truly become an extension of our families. And so we've put so much of ourselves into it. We need to get what we can out of it. And I don't mean that as out of it, but it has to be fulfilling. And I think that there's a bit of a time in our careers where we step back as individuals and we have that opportunity to really think about what the future looks like. And so for me, you know, early on, I would say take on and tackle as many new opportunities that come your way and still keep doing that. Stay curious a little bit longer, encourage a growth mindset. And then as you start to move through those lived experiences, really define and set your values of who you are, what you want to be, and where you want to go, and how it aligns to the organization. And that will open up tremendous doors on a go forward once you know who you are as a leader. And that would be my advice for anybody. And make sure you take time for yourself, continuously invest in yourself, continuously learn.
So many great advices. Thanks a lot. You already tackled the future to some extent, maybe from a broader perspective. What do you imagine the future of financial services industry looking like, for example, in 2015?
I look at how fast technology has changed today. And I think about, you know, there was only a few years ago where cloud seemed to be relatively new. And now you've got AI, which is a relatively hot topic. And people are talking about quantum computing and planetary computing. And now we're even looking at space as the next realm and 5G. And so that's through the lens of technology. But when I think about where we are in 2050, I think about the substantial changes that our industry is up against today. And so, you know, I've spent a lot of time in Asia in the last couple of months and in the last year, and I look at even the differences between Asia Pacific versus North America with regards to payments and open banking. And in Asia, everyone is doing everything on a smartphone and payment transformation at scale. And you look at China going completely cashless. And then you look at Canada, where it's a very different market. And so I think if we look at some of the regulatory changes in the regulatory environment within the next 5 to 10 years, that's really going to dictate where we're going. But the biggest opportunities and transformation that I see are digital lending, digital capital raise, digital payments, digital banking, insurtech, cross transformation between insurance and healthcare, even more so than it is today. And I think organizations will move more from bricks and mortar, even more so than they have, to self-serve AI-enabled or technology-enabled decisions at scale. And we're going to see a massive transformation of wealth within the next 5 to 10 years. And that will have even further impact on the way that large-scale organizations serve the needs of many. So if I could wave a magic wand, I'm not quite sure where I would get to. But I think that the amount of change that we as a financial services ecosystem are embarking on, it's going to be very different than it is today.
It will definitely not get boring at the intersection of tech and finance. Yeah. Amazing. Thank you so much for your time. It was a very interesting and also inspiring discussion. Thanks a lot for this.
Thank you. This has been an honor and a pleasure. So thank you very much for having me.
Oh my goodness, Annika. What an amazing interview. What another great guest. And Jacqueline had just so much to share around her insights, both practically and just like us living through our own experiences and perspectives in this space. I know you've been to many rooms and many senior leadership conversations and board discussions around transformation in your daily work. And I know it's not every day that you run into people that probably look like you. And I think one of the cool things around this episode was the stats, and we both like facts. How do you see that perspective, or what are some of the things that, you know, when hearing her talk about the barriers really resonated with you?
I could feel her in so many of her assumptions and statistics she gave us. It was really impressive to see that basically everyone is having the same challenges, but most likely also the same perspective on topics. So for instance, what impressed me most about Jacqueline specifically is that she's even combining technology and finance, which are like both usually areas where women are in the minority. And she really made it up to combine those spaces and made it up to being the lead in this for Canada. I think she's such a cool role model here.
I totally agree. I like really resonated with like hearing her talk about healing through her own experiences. And one of them is being a woman and, you know, like taking that responsibility for your role and the impact that can have and turning that into a positive experience is also something that really resonated with me. Saying, okay, what are the barriers or what are the things, or just even owning that space, like easier said than done. I've cried in many bathrooms and I've held my breath many times or been asked to serve water, which is like hilarious. What has been your own experience, Annika? Like, I'm sure you've lived through a few and you've worked in many different geographies as well, which have their own, you know, even cultural boundaries and understandings of diversity.
Yeah, unfortunately, not so much has changed through the years. So I'm still mostly the only woman in the room when we're talking about board meetings, or also steering committees. But I have the feeling the more we like group up, the easier it gets. So, I mean, also having a look at the conferences you usually speak, Bianca, I have the feeling when we look at the panels or at the other speakers, it's still quite rare having a female expert. What would you maybe suggest other like young professionals, what would be your key advice for them to make their way up?
To own their uniqueness. I think I've hidden behind or consciously or unconsciously used my identity, whether that it's of being a woman or being, it's sometimes put a barrier in my own path. Like I've been worried or concerned or threatened. And I think that the difference of how I carry myself through the world today that opens doors is just by accepting what's kind of unique and quirky or different or me about me. It's like, and that me about me is different for every person. So I think like the earlier you can kind of go back to that and get to earn that and own that and not own it in, you know, ego shows off, like confidence, like it's subtle. It's just like, you know, you don't need to do the like peacock dance to tell the world that, hey, I'm a peacock over here. Like, look how cool. Like, just be.
Well, thanks for sharing your insights here, Bianca. I think it's great hearing from other female leaders on what their way up was and also what's their key advice here.
This has been FinTech Files, a podcast from BCG Platinum.
This season, we're diving into the groundbreaking ideas shaping the future of FinTech. And we want to hear from you, our listeners. What topics would you like us to cover? And who are your dream guests? Drop us a line anytime at fintech-podcast@bcgplatinian.com. We'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening.